You probably often hear that a wife is to be her husband's helper. But what does that really mean? Here's Mary Cassian.
What does the woman help man do? She helps him image God and tell the gospel story.
This is the Revive Our Hearts podcast with Nancy DeMoss Walgamuth, co-author of True Woman 101 for June 7th, 2018.
Probably remember that song from The Sound of Music. Let's start at the very beginning, a very good place to start. You've heard it. Well, when you want to understand an issue, sometimes it's helpful to go back to the beginning. Yesterday, Mary Cassian helped us understand the value of distinct male and female roles by taking us back to the Garden of Eden, where male and female all began. She presented this message called The Genesis of Gender at a True Woman conference several years ago. We're about to hear part two, Observing God's Pattern for Manhood and Womanhood. And before we listen to this message, let me just remind you that Mary Cassian, along with several other speakers, will be with us at True Woman 18, September 27th through 29th in Indianapolis. And again, as I'm recording this, we have just a handful of seats left, so go to truewoman.com to see if the event's been sold out yet. If not, you may be able to snatch a couple of seats for you and a friend. And if we're sold out, then let me urge you to still circle those dates on your calendar and plan to join for the live stream, which will be a specially hosted live stream event this September 27th through 29th for those who want to do the conference together with others in their church or in their home or in some other setting. You can get all the details about the conference and the live stream at reviveourhearts.com. Now let's get to Mary Cassian, picking back up on the contrasts between men and women based on Genesis chapter 2.
So the Lord sets the male up in his new place, the garden, his garden, to be head of a new family unit. But before the father presents him with a wife and fills his walls up, he takes some time to teach him about the specific roles and responsibilities of a man. So the man was commissioned to work. The Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it, verse 15. The word translated work is a common word for tilling the soil or for other labor. And what it contains is the idea of serving someone other than yourself. Okay, that's that word work contains that idea of self-sacrifice and self-service. It's the same word in Hebrew that's often used to describe also the duties of priests in worship. So the man's life in the garden wasn't supposed to be one of idleness. He wasn't supposed to be sitting around playing video games or sitting on the couch watching TV. God's plan from the very start was that he would have something to do. And God created men to be the providers, physically and spiritually. And that doesn't mean that women don't contribute or that women can't play a role, but it does indicate that the primary responsibility for looking after the family rests on the man's shoulders. And God wired them with a drive to look after families in that way. Now, you know in these tough economic times, and you know if your husband is unemployed, how deeply it affects a man to be unable to provide for his family. Did you agree with me? Yes. Because God wired them like that. That's not a cultural thing. That's because God created man with this desire to serve and to work, to provide for the people within his pod, within his boundaries. The male was also commissioned to protect. The Lord God put him in the garden to work it and keep it. So God wanted the man to keep the garden. And keep in Hebrew translates a verb meaning to be in charge of, to look after, to guard, to protect. It means to provide oversight. It means being attentive and protecting the people and the property under your sphere of influence, physically and spiritually. So the Lord created the men to be the protectors. He created their bodies to be physically stronger than women's bodies and more suited for a fight, right? And this doesn't exclude women from contributing. We all know, like, if anybody threatens our cubs, Mama Bear pulls out those claws, right? But man is the primary protector. If a robber crawls into the window, it's the man that gets up to take the bullet, right? It's not the woman who says, stay here, honey, I'll take care of it. You just stay in bed, be safe. That's not the way it works. And don't we all as women want men who are going to step up to the plate and to have that heart for us? Don't we long for it? We do. So God was instructing his firstborn man, male here. He wanted to give him instruction on how to be a man. So the male received spiritual instruction, and the Lord commanded the man, saying, "You may surely eat of every tree of the garden, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, for in the day that you eat it, you shall surely die." Genesis 2, 16 and 17. So before the woman arrived on the scene, God explained the rules of the garden to the man. And it was up to the man to pass on this spiritual instruction to his wife. Now, that's not to say that the man interacted with God on her behalf. Okay, she had her own personal relationship with the Lord, and she spoke with the Lord and fellowshipped with the Lord. But it does indicate that as leader of his newly minted pod, his new home, the man had a special responsibility to learn and understand the ways of the Lord. And this was so that he could fulfill his commission to provide spiritual oversight and protection. So we see this in the book of Genesis. It wasn't that God wasn't concerned about instructing the women. He was very concerned. But the Lord was just training. It was like Adam was in the trainee school of how to be a husband and a father school, learning what he needed to learn in order to be the man he needed to be for his family. The male, and this is the sixth point, learned to exercise authority. Now, out of the ground, the Lord God had formed every beast of the field and every bird of the heavens and brought them to the man to see what he would call them. And whatever the man called every living creature, that was its name. That was Genesis verse 19 and 20 of chapter 2. Can you imagine what that looked like? That must have been chaotic, all these animals coming to Adam. I think I would like to see a movie being made of that one day. It would be quite humorous. But it seems to me that besides serving the purpose of making the man yearn for a suitable mate, because all the animals had mates and he didn't, besides that, it was kind of a training exercise. Because to name something is to exercise authority over it. And so the Lord was there probably with Adam, coaching him, seeing if Adam was picking up on getting this authority thing right, because the Lord was very concerned that Adam exercise authority in a godly manner. His firstborn had a unique responsibility to govern, and the Lord wanted him to govern well. And so he closely supervised and mentored him through this naming process. And he wanted him to learn to exercise his authority with gentleness and kindness and wisdom and much, much care. Now, Genesis chapter 1 clearly indicates that dominion over the earth was given both to women and men. All right, we have dominion over the earth. I have dominion over the earth, as do you. God created you that way. So the reason that God excluded the woman from this process of naming the animals doesn't indicate that she lacks God's authority to govern. All right, we have God's authority to govern. Women do as well. But our authority is different than a man's authority. All right, it's different. The Lord does not view our responsibility as women to govern as interchangeable. All right, we can't swap places. It's not like, okay, you be the man today, I'll be the man tomorrow. Right? It's not interchangeable. There's a difference in the authority that God has given us. And we see that clearly in this process in creation. So here we've got the picture. Here, the man was the firstborn. He didn't have a pod, though. Didn't have a kin. He was the head of a new household, but his were the only feet that were walking within the walls. God had commissioned him to work, but there was no one to provide for. And the man knew that it was his mission to guard and to protect, but there was nobody to look after. And he had thought of all these new ideas, and God had given him instruction, but there was nobody to discuss it with. And he was bursting at the seams with all this desire of who he was. He was created to love and to serve and protect, but as the day wore on, and after he named animal after animal, it became painfully obvious that there was no creature with the capacity to receive what this man so deeply wanted to give. There was nowhere for Adam to put all of it. There was nowhere for him. There was no outlet for him to be who God created him to be. And the Lord knew it, I think. I think he could have seen it on Adam's face. It was the only thing in creation that was not good, but I think it was necessary. God deemed it necessary. It was part of the training, part of the preparation. You see, God wanted his firstborn son to catch a glimpse of the full import of God's final and most magnificent work. He wanted man to feel the longing intensely, to love and to want a soulmate with such passion that he was willing to pay the ultimate price to get his bride. And God knew that he would have to wound his firstborn son to create woman. And it would draw blood, be painful, messy. Having a bride would cost the man dearly. And so when the male named that last animal and he turned to his maker with his tear-filled eyes, the Lord knew that it was time to make her, time to make this woman, time to make the one who would captivate this man's heart as completely as the vision of the Lord's coming heavenly bride had captivated God's heart. And so he said to the man, "Sleep." And the man sunk down onto the soft moss as though he was dead. And then the Lord did what? He pierced his side. He pierced the side of the man, and he extracted this fleshy, bloody bone, mass of flesh in his hand, wounded his son right in the side. And I wonder, when I think about it, and I just envision what was going on there, I wonder if a lump formed in the throat of God, so to speak, as he saw forward to the future to which this image pointed, because you see it, don't you, as I'm speaking? Do you see the imagery? Do you see how powerful, how strong it is, how thorough it is, pointing toward the work of Jesus Christ when he would pierce his firstborn son's side so that the church would find life and so Christ's bride would be birthed? I wonder what thoughts were flying through the Creator's mind as he carefully sculpted the curves of Eve and his final masterpiece. It tipped the scales, it set it all in motion. And when he stood back and took a look at her, Genesis records that he said, "You know what?" Everything else he said when he had created, he said, "This is good. This is good." And what did he say when he had finished creating woman? "This is very good." But not so much because of the flesh standing in front of him, but because of his heart for the church and the glory of God. Do you see it? Do you see it? Let's have a look at the woman, the next 6 points. God created woman from the side of man, so she's made of the same stuff, but he didn't create her at the same time, at the same place, in the same way. And we've already looked at the 6 points of difference in the creation of the male, so now we're going to look at 6 points of difference in the creation of the female. The female was created from the male. So the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall upon the man, and while he slept, he took one of his ribs and closed up its place with flesh. And the rib that the Lord God had taken from the man, he made into a woman. That was verses 21 and 22. Now, in our culture, we have a common admonition, and it's remember where you came from, okay? You ever heard you say that? My son, I'm actually going to go see him play. Hopefully, first time I will see him in an NHL jersey in Minnesota with the Minnesota Wild. Any of you hockey fans? All two of you are? Wasn't Sarah Palin said hockey moms are like pit bulls with lipstick or something? But when Matt left home to play hockey, it was like his mama, me, you know, my big son, and, you know, saying, don't you ever forget where home is. Don't ever get too big for your britches, okay? And so that's a common admonition, the remember where you came from. And it's a warning to avoid pride and to avoid this overinflated sense of self-importance. Now, we intuitively know that it's inappropriate to regard this, where we came from, as lesser than us. That's inappropriate, right? And we know that we're obliged to honor and to respect our origins. Where we came from, we have an obligation to respect that from which we came. And the same sort of idea is present in the creation of the female. Woman was drawn from man's side, and because of that, it was appropriate that she had an attitude of respect towards the man. To respect where she came from. And 1 Corinthians 11, 8 to 10 kind of taps into that concept. For man was not made from woman, but woman from man, and that's why a wife ought to have a symbol of authority on her head. So she came, so there's it's appropriate for a woman to be respectful of a man because of the order of creation. The next one, the female was made for the male. Then the Lord God said, it is not good that man should be alone. I will make a helper fit for him. Genesis 2:18. Now, this doesn't go over so well, does it? The idea of thinking that woman was created for man. But in 1 Corinthians 11:9, it says that this is the basis of a woman respecting the authority of her husband. And for most of us, that idea of being created for man sounds kind of negative because it seems to imply that it gives the men license to use and abuse women. But nothing could be further from the truth. And that's actually not the meaning of the text at all. Because in the Hebrew, that preposition for actually means direction. She was created towards or with reference to him or on account of him. She exists because he exists. She exists because he exists. His existence led to hers, and it didn't happen the other way around. And remember, keeping the imagery of Christ and the church in mind, you can see how this all makes sense. And our adverse reaction to the idea that we were created for man just serves to underline how very far we have fallen from our original created order. I just think of my daughter-in-law, Jacqueline, when she walked through that door down the aisle to be married to my son, and just the look on her face, just beaming. And thinking, I'm sure, I was created for this guy, for this moment, for this glory. And so that's the idea here in Genesis. It's a very positive, beautiful thing, beautiful thing. The female was also created to help the male, a helper fit for him. And I just want to address this because we talked about what that word means a little bit. But I want to address another part of that question, because the fact that women were created to be a help to man doesn't mean that they were created to serve the selfish ends of men. And it begs the question, what exactly does it mean for a female to help the male? Like, what does that mean? And I think the whole question becomes much clearer when we consider, what is it that the woman was created to help the man do? Right? Because it wasn't about the man. What is it that woman was created to help the man do? And there's a clue in the qualifier, fit for him. So she's a helper fit for him. That means she is like opposite him. All right, she's like the counterpart, like an image in a mirror. And the term is unique here to Genesis. And it expresses that notion of complementarity. She's not exactly like him. She's like opposite him. And she's a helper alongside. So she helps alongside. Well, helps what? Helps him do what? And that alongside part is extremely important because the purpose of woman helping man isn't about exalting the man or serving him. It's not about him at all. Her help contributes to both of them alongside, together, achieving a greater and a nobler and an eternal purpose that is far bigger and more significant than their own existence. What does the woman help man do? She helps him image God and tell the gospel story.
That's Mary Cassian speaking at True Woman 10 in Chattanooga. When a wife embraces her role as a helper, it has a huge effect on her marriage, and I'm surely learning that in this season of my life as a wife to Robert Wolgemuth. But it's far bigger than that. When we as women live out our God-created design and calling, we're putting the gospel on display. Perhaps after hearing this portion of Mary's message, you're thinking of ways that you could better support your husband. I want to encourage you to respond to what you've just heard by simply saying, "Yes, Lord. I embrace the role you've called me to in this season for your glory." Mary Cassian has written a book that shows us many practical ways to live out a message of biblical womanhood, whether you're married or single again at each different season of life. Her book is called Girls Gone Wise in a World Gone Wild. And I want to tell you, I can't recommend this book highly enough. Each chapter deals with different aspects of our womanhood, and it's all based on Proverbs chapter 7, a really important chapter about a woman who did not understand or live out her biblical womanhood. So each chapter in Mary's book gives you practical insights about a specific area of our womanhood. They're chapters that deal with our attitudes, our appearance, roles, sexual conduct, so important today, but other things like possessions, entitlement, our speech, and so on. So I want to urge you to get a copy of this book. First, to read it for yourself. I found it so helpful to me in my own walk as a woman. And then consider how you might share this important message with some other women in your life. Maybe you could give a copy to your daughter or your granddaughter. And the Lord may even prompt you to start a small group where you could study this book together. I had the joy of doing that myself some time ago. Well, we'd like to send you a copy of Girls Gone Wise. It's our way of saying thank you when you support Revive Our Hearts with a gift of any size. Just call us at 1-800-569-5959. And be sure to ask for Girls Gone Wise. Again, that number is 1-800-569-5959. Or you can make your donation at reviveourhearts.com. Thank you so much for your encouragement, your prayers, and your financial support as we challenge women to live out the beauty of the gospel in our day.
Thanks, Nancy. Tomorrow we'll hear the concluding segment of Mary's message. Find out how women can have true, powerful influence. It comes from following God's design. Mary will explain more on Revive Our Hearts. Revive Our Hearts with Nancy DeMoss Walkemuth wants to help you grow in wisdom. It's an outreach of Life Action Ministries.